And his behaviour, so strikingly altered, what could it mean? That he should even come to her aid was amazing. But to speak to her, and with such civility, to inquire after her well-being. Never in her life had she seen his manners so little dignified. Never had he spoken with such gentleness as on this unexpected meeting. What a contrast did it offer to his last address in Rosings Park when he put his letter into her hand. She knew not what to think or how to account for it. They entered the woods and ascended some of the higher grounds, where the zombies, with their dry muscles and brittle bones, were less likely to bother them. Mr. Gardner expressed a wish of going round the whole park, but feared it might be too dangerous, given the propinquity of the herd. A nearby roar from one of Satan's soldiers settled the matter, and they pursued the accustomed circuit, which brought them again, after some time, in a descent among hanging woods to the edge of the water and one of its narrowest parts. They crossed it by a simple bridge, which they were informed was assembled from the violated headstones of Pemberley. It was a spot less adorned than any they had yet visited, and the valley, here contracted into a glen, allowed room only for the stream and a narrow walk amidst the rough coppice wood which bordered it. Elizabeth longed to explore its windings, but when they had crossed the bridge and perceived their distance from the house, Mrs. Gardner, who was still frightened by what had transpired, begged they go no farther and thought only of returning to the carriage as quickly as possible. Her niece was, therefore, obliged to submit, and they took their way towards the house on the opposite side of the river, in the nearest direction. Their progress was slow, for Mr. Gardner, though seldom able to indulge the taste, was very fond of fishing, and was so much engaged in watching the occasional appearance of some trout in the water, and talking to the man about them, that he advanced but little. Whilst wandering on in this slow manner, they were again surprised by the sight of Mr. Darcy approaching them, and at no great distance. The walk here, being less sheltered than on the other side, allowed them to see him before they met. Elizabeth, however astonished, was at least more prepared for an interview than before, and resolved to appear and to speak with calmness if he really intended to meet them. For a few moments, indeed, she felt that he would probably strike into some other path. Perhaps he had merely returned to hunt the scattered unmentionables. The idea lasted while a turning in the walk concealed him from their view. The turning passed, he was immediately before them. With a glance, she saw that he had lost none of his recent civility, and to imitate his politeness, she began, as they met, to admire the beauty of the place. But she had not got beyond the words delightful and charming when some unlucky recollections obtruded, and she fancied that praise of Pemberley from her might be mischievously construed. Her colour changed, and she said no more. Mrs. Gardner was standing a little behind, and on her pausing he asked her if she would do him the honour of introducing him to her friends. This was a stroke of civility for which she was quite unprepared, and she could hardly suppress a smile at his being now seeking the acquaintance of some of those very people against whom his pride had revolted in his offer to herself. What will be his surprise, thought she, when he knows who they are? He takes them now for people of fashion. The introduction, however, was immediately made, and as she named their relationship to herself, she stole a sly look at him to see how he bore it, and was not without the expectation of his decamping as fast as he could from such disgraceful companions. That he was surprised by the connection was evident. He sustained it, however, with fortitude, and so far from going away, turned back with them and entered into conversation with Mr. Gardner. Elizabeth could not but be pleased, could not but triumph. It was consoling that he should know she had some relations for whom there was no need to blush. She listened most attentively to all that passed between them, and gloried in every expression, every sentence of her uncle, which marked his intelligence, his taste, or his good manners. The conversation soon turned upon musket fishing, and she heard Mr. Darcy invite him, with the greatest civility, to shoot fish there as often as he chose while he continued in the neighbourhood, offering at the same time to supply him with a fishing musket, and pointing out those parts of the stream where there was usually most sport. Mrs. Gardiner, who was walking arm in arm with Elizabeth, gave her a look expressive of wonder. Elizabeth said nothing, but it gratified her exceedingly. The compliment must be all for herself. Her astonishment, however, was extreme, and continually was she repeating, "Why is he so altered? From what can it proceed? It cannot be for me. It cannot be for my sake that his manners are thus softened. It is impossible that he should still love me, unless by kicking him into the mantelpiece during our battle at Hunsford I effected some severe change in his countenance." After walking some time in this way, the two ladies in front, the two gentlemen behind, on resuming their places after descending to the brink of the river for the better inspection of some zombie droppings, there chanced to be a little alteration. It originated in Mrs. Gardiner, who, fatigued by the exercise of the morning, found Elizabeth's arm inadequate to her support, and consequently preferred her husband's. Mr. Darcy took her place by her niece, and they walked on together. After a short silence, the lady first spoke. She wished him to know that she had been assured of his absence before she came to the place, and accordingly began by observing that his arrival had been very unexpected. "For your housekeeper," she added, "informed us that you would certainly not be here till tomorrow, and indeed, before we left Bakewell, we understood that you were not immediately expected in the country." He acknowledged the truth of it all, and said that business with his steward had occasioned his coming forward a few hours before the rest of the party with whom he had been travelling. "They will join me early tomorrow," he continued, "and among them are some who will claim an acquaintance with you. Mr. Bingley and his sisters." Elizabeth answered only by a slight bow. Her thoughts were instantly driven back to the time when Mr. Bingley's name had been the last mentioned between them, and if she might judge by his complexion, his mind was not very differently engaged. "There is also one other person in the party," he continued after a pause, "who more particularly wishes to be known to you. Will you allow me, or do I ask too much, to introduce my sister to your acquaintance during your stay at Lambton?" The surprise of such an application was great indeed. It was too great for her to know in what manner she acceded to it. She immediately felt that whatever desire Miss Darcy might have of being acquainted with her must be the work of her brother, and without looking farther, it was satisfactory. It was gratifying to know that his resentment had not made him think really ill of her. They now walked on in silence, each of them deep in thought. Elizabeth was not comfortable. That was impossible. But she was flattered and pleased. His wish of introducing his sister to her was a compliment of the highest kind. They soon outstripped the others, and when they had reached the carriage, Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner were half a quarter of a mile behind. He then asked her to walk into the house, but she declared herself not tired, and they stood together on the lawn. At such a time much might have been said, but nothing was. Elizabeth and Darcy merely looked at one another in awkward silence, until the latter reached both arms around her. She was frozen. What does he mean to do? She thought. But his intentions were respectable, for Darcy merely meant to retrieve his brown Bess, which Elizabeth had affixed to her back during her walk. She remembered the lead ammunition in her pocket and offered it to him. "Your balls, Mr. Darcy?" He reached out and closed her hand around them and offered, "They belong to you, Miss Bennet." Upon this their colour changed, and they were forced to look away from one another lest they laugh. On Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner's coming up, they were all pressed to go into the house and take some refreshment, but this was declined, and they parted on each side with utmost politeness. Mr. Darcy handed the ladies into the carriage, and when it drove off, Elizabeth saw him walking slowly towards the house. The observations of her uncle and aunt now began, and each of them pronounced him to be infinitely superior to anything they had expected. "He is perfectly well-behaved, polite, and unassuming," said her uncle. "There is something a little stately in him, to be sure," replied her aunt. "But it is confined to his air, and is not unbecoming. I can now say with the housekeeper that though some people may call him proud, I have seen nothing of it. Such horsemanship, such musketry!" "I was never more surprised than by his behaviour to us. It was more than civil, it was really attentive, and there was no necessity for such attention. His acquaintance with Elizabeth was very trifling. "To be sure, Lizzie," said her aunt, "he is not so handsome as Wickham, or rather, he has not Wickham's countenance, for his features are perfectly good. But how came you to tell me that he was so disagreeable?" Elizabeth excused herself as well as she could, said that she had liked him better when they had met in Kent than before, and that she had never seen him so pleasant as this morning. "But perhaps he may be a little whimsical in his civilities," replied her uncle. "Your great men often are, and therefore I shall not take him at his word, as he might change his mind another day and bludgeon me with his musket for taking trout from his stock." Elizabeth felt that they had entirely misunderstood his character, but said nothing. "From what we have seen of him," continued Mrs. Gardiner, "I really should not have thought that he could have behaved in so cruel a way by anybody as he has done by poor Wickham. He has not an ill-natured look. On the contrary, there is something pleasing about his mouth when he speaks, and there is something of dignity in the way his trousers cling to those most English parts of him. But, to be sure, the good lady who showed us his house did give him a most congratulatory appraisal. I could hardly help laughing aloud sometimes, but he is a liberal master, I suppose, and servants are often too complimentary out of a desire to keep their heads." Elizabeth here felt herself called on to say something in vindication of his behaviour to Wickham, and therefore gave them to understand, in as guarded a manner as she could, that by what she had heard from his relations in Kent, his actions were capable of a very different construction, and that his character was by no means so faulty, nor Wickham's so amiable as they had been considered in Hertfordshire. In confirmation of this, she related the particulars of the stable-boy business, without actually naming her authority, but stating it to be such as might be relied on. Mrs. Gardiner was surprised and concerned, but as they were now approaching the scene of her former pleasures, every idea gave way to the charm of recollection, and she was too much engaged in pointing out to her husband all the interesting spots where she and her former lover had frittered away many a summer afternoon before circumstances required the affair to be broken off. Fatigued as she had been by the morning's attack, they had no sooner dined than she set off in quest of her former acquaintance, and, unbeknownst to the sleeping Mr. Gardiner, her evening was spent in the satisfactions of intercourse renewed after many years' discontinuance. The occurrences of the day were too full of interest to leave Elizabeth much attention for her aunt's dalliances, and she could do nothing but think, and think with wonder, of Mr. Darcy's civility, and above all, of his wishing her to be acquainted with his sister. Chapter 44. Elizabeth had settled it that Mr. Darcy would bring his sister to visit her the very day after her reaching Pemberley, and was consequently resolved not to be out of sight of the inn the whole of that morning. But her conclusion was false, for on the very morning after their arrival at Lambton, these visitors came. Much to Mr. Gardiner's displeasure, they had been walking about the place with Mrs. Gardiner's old friend, a Polish-born gentleman who went only by Silwak, and were just returning to the inn to dress themselves for dining with the same, when the sound of a carriage drew them to a window, and they saw a gentleman and a lady in a curricle driving up the street. Elizabeth, immediately recognizing the livery, guessed what it meant, and imparted no small degree of her surprise to her relations by acquainting them with the honour which she expected. Her uncle and aunt were all amazement, and the embarrassment of her manner as she spoke, joined to the circumstance itself and many of the circumstances of the preceding day, opened to them a new idea on the business. Nothing had ever suggested it before, but they felt that there was no other way of accounting for such attentions from such a quarter than by supposing a partiality for their niece. While these newly born notions were passing in their heads, the perturbation of Elizabeth's feelings was at every moment increasing. Given her battle-tested nerves, she was quite amazed at her own discomposure, but amongst other causes of disquiet, she dreaded lest the partiality of the brother should have said too much in her favour, and, more than commonly anxious to please, she naturally suspected that every power of pleasing would fail her. She retreated from the window, fearful of being seen, and as she walked up and down the room, endeavouring to compose herself, saw such looks of inquiring surprise in her uncle and aunt as made everything worse. Miss Darcy and her brother appeared, and this formidable introduction took place. With astonishment did Elizabeth see that her new acquaintance was at least as much embarrassed as herself. Since her being at Lambton, she had heard that Miss Darcy was exceedingly proud, but the observation of a very few minutes convinced her that she was only exceedingly shy. She found it difficult to obtain even a word from her beyond a monosyllable. Miss Darcy was tall and on a larger scale than Elizabeth, and though little more than 16, her figure was formed and her appearance womanly and soft. There was something of a natural grace to her movements, and though she clearly had much to learn in the ways of delivering death, she was far from the distracting clumsiness of most girls her age. Her legs and fingers were uncommonly long, and Elizabeth could not help but think what a fine apprentice she would make were she only inclined to follow her brother's example with greater enthusiasm. She was less handsome than her brother, but there was sense and good humour in her face, and her manners were perfectly unassuming and gentle. They had not long been together before Mr. Darcy told her that Bingley was also coming to wait on her, and she had barely time to express her satisfaction and prepare for such a visitor, when Bingley's clumsy, untrained steps were heard on the stairs, and in a moment he entered the room. All Elizabeth's anger against him had been long done away, but had she still felt any, it could hardly have stood its ground against the unaffected cordiality with which he expressed himself on seeing her again. He inquired in a friendly, though general, way after her family, and looked and spoke with the same good-humoured ease that he had ever done. In seeing Bingley, her thoughts naturally flew to Jane, and oh, how ardently did she long to know whether any of his were directed in a like manner. Sometimes she could fancy that he talked less than on former occasions, and once or twice pleased herself with the notion that, as he looked at her, he was trying to trace a resemblance. But though this might be imaginary, she could not be deceived as to his behaviour to Miss Darcy, who had been set up as a rival to Jane. No look appeared on either side that spoke to an attraction. Nothing occurred between them that could justify the hopes of Bingley's sister. On this point she was soon satisfied, and two or three little circumstances occurred before they parted, which, in her anxious interpretation, denoted a recollection of Jane touched by tenderness, and a wish of saying more that might lead to the mention of her, had he dared. He observed to her at a moment when the others were talking together, and in a tone which had something of real regret, that it was a very long time since he had had the pleasure of seeing her, and before she could reply, he added, "It is above 8 months. We have not met since the 26th of November, when my staff at Netherfield was so unhappily visited upon." Elizabeth was pleased to find his memory so exact, and he afterwards took occasion to ask her, when unattended by any of the rest, whether all her sisters were at Longbourn. There was not much in the question, nor in the preceding remark, but there was a look and a manner which gave them meaning. It was not often that she could turn her eyes on Mr. Darcy himself, but whenever she did catch a glimpse, she felt an excitement greater even than the thrill of confronting the devil's legions, and in all that he said she heard an accent so removed from hauteur or disdain of his companions as convinced her that the improvement of manners which she had yesterday witnessed had at least outlived one day. When she saw him thus courting the good opinion of people with whom any intercourse a few months ago would have been a disgrace, when she saw him thus civil not only to herself but to the very relations whom he had openly disdained, the difference, the change, was so great and struck so forcibly on her mind that she could hardly believe herself unaffected by a cup of dragon's milk tea. Never, even in the company of his dear friends at Netherfield, or his dignified relations at Rosings, had she seen him so desirous to please as now, when no importance could result from the success of his endeavours, and when even the acquaintance of those to whom his attentions were addressed would draw down the ridicule and censure of the ladies both of Netherfield and Rosings. Their visitors stayed with them above half an hour, And when they arose to depart, Mr. Darcy called on his sister to join him in expressing their wish of seeing Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner and Miss Bennet to dinner at Pemberley before they left the country. Miss Darcy, though with a timidity which marked her little in the habit of giving invitations, readily obeyed. Mrs. Gardiner looked at her niece, desirous of knowing how she, whom the invitation most concerned, felt disposed as to its acceptance, but Elizabeth had turned away her head. Presuming, however, that this studied avoidance spoke rather a momentary embarrassment than any dislike of the proposal, and seeing in her husband, who was fond of society, a perfect willingness to accept it, she ventured to engage for her attendance, and the day after the next was fixed on. Bingley expressed great pleasure in the certainty of seeing Elizabeth again, having still a great deal to say to her, and many inquiries to make after all their Hertfordshire friends. Elizabeth, construing all this into a wish of hearing her speak of her sister, was pleased, and on this account, as well as some others, found herself, when their visitors left them, capable of considering the last half-hour as one of the happiest she had ever spent without spilling a drop of blood. Eager to be alone and fearful of inquiries or hints from her uncle and aunt, she stayed with them only long enough to hear their favourable opinion of Bingley, and then hurried away to dress. But she had no reason to fear Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner's curiosity, for unlike her meddling mother, it was not their wish to force her communication. It was evident that she was much better acquainted with Mr. Darcy than they had before any idea of. It was evident that he was very much in love with her. They saw so much to interest, but nothing to justify inquiry. Of Mr. Darcy, it was now a matter of anxiety to think well, and as far as their acquaintance reached, there was no fault to find. They could not be untouched by his coming to their rescue at Pemberley, or his politeness thereafter, and had they drawn his character from their own feelings and his servant's report, the circle in Hertfordshire to which he was known would not have recognised it for Mr. Darcy. With respect to Wickham, the travellers soon found that he was not held there in much estimation, for though the chief of his concerns with the son of his patron were imperfectly understood, it was yet a well-known fact that, on his quitting Derbyshire, he had left many debts behind him, which Mr. Darcy afterwards discharged. It was also widely rumoured that he had engaged in improprieties with two local girls, both of whom sadly fell victim to the plague and had to be burned before charges could be brought. As for Elizabeth, her thoughts were at Pemberley this evening more than the last, and the evening, though as it passed it seemed long, was not long enough to determine her feelings towards one in that mansion, and she lay awake 2 whole hours endeavouring to make them out. She certainly did not hate him. No, hatred had vanished long ago, and she had almost as long been ashamed of ever wishing to drink the blood from his severed head. The respect created by the conviction of his valuable qualities, though at first unwillingly admitted, had for some time ceased to be repugnant to her feeling, and it was now heightened into somewhat of a friendlier nature by the testimony so highly in his favour, and bringing forward his disposition in so amiable a light which yesterday had produced. But above all, above respect and esteem, there was a motive within her of good will which could not be overlooked. It was gratitude. Gratitude not merely for having once loved her, but for loving her still well enough to forgive all the petulance and acrimony of her manner in rejecting his offer with a kick to the face, and all the unjust accusations accompanying her rejection. He, who she had been persuaded would avoid her as his greatest enemy, seemed, on this accidental meeting, most eager to preserve the acquaintance, and without any indelicate display of regard or any peculiarity of manner where their 2 selves only were concerned, was soliciting the good opinion of her friends and bent on making her known to his sister. Such a change in a man of so much pride excited not only astonishment but gratitude, for to love, ardent love, it must be attributed— and as such its impression on her was by no means unpleasing, though it could not be exactly defined. She respected, she esteemed, she was grateful to him. She felt a real interest in his welfare, where she had been taught to ignore all feeling, all excitement. She now found herself with an excess of both. How strange. For the more she dwelled on the subject, the more powerful she felt, not for her mastery of the deadly arts, but for her power over the heart of another. What a power it was! But how to wield it? Of all the weapons she had commanded, Elizabeth knew the least of love, and of all the weapons in the world, love was the most dangerous. It had been settled in the evening between the aunt and the niece that such a striking civility as Miss Darcy's in coming to see them on the very day of her arrival at Pemberley ought to be imitated, though it could not be equalled, by some exertion of politeness on their side, and consequently that it would be highly expedient to wait on her at Pemberley the following morning. They were, therefore, to go. Elizabeth was pleased, though when she asked herself the reason, she had very little to say in reply. Mr. Gardiner left them soon after breakfast. The fishing scheme had been renewed the day before, and a positive engagement made of his meeting some of the gentlemen at Pemberley before noon. Chapter 45. Convinced as Elizabeth now was that Miss Bingley's dislike of her had originated in jealousy, she could not help feeling how unwelcome her appearance at Pemberley must be to her, and was curious to know with how much civility on that lady's side the acquaintance would now be renewed. On reaching the house, they were shown through the hall into the Shinto shrine, whose northern aspect rendered it delightful for summer. Its windows opening to the ground, the shrine admitted a most refreshing view of the high woody hills behind the house, and its many sacred mirrors honoured the gods while creating a most pleasing abundance of light. In this shrine they were received by Miss Darcy, who was sitting there with Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley and the lady with whom she lived in London. Georgiana's reception of them was very civil, but attended with all the embarrassment which, though proceeding from shyness and the fear of doing wrong, would easily give to those who felt themselves inferior the belief of her being proud and reserved. Mrs. Gardiner and her niece, however, did her justice and pitied her. By Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley they were noticed only by a curtsy, and on their being seated, a pause, awkward as such pauses must always be, succeeded for a few moments. It was first broken by Mrs. Annesley, a genteel, agreeable-looking woman, whose endeavour to introduce some kind of discourse proved her to be more truly well-bred than either of the others, and between her and Mrs. Gardiner, with occasional help from Elizabeth, the conversation was carried on. Miss Darcy looked as if she wished for courage enough to join in it, and sometimes did venture a short sentence when there was least danger of its being heard. Elizabeth saw that she was herself closely watched by Miss Bingley, and that she could not speak a word, especially to Miss Darcy, without calling her attention. "Oh, how she must long to strike at me with her clumsy, untrained fists," thought Elizabeth. "What fun it would be to see her lose her composure so." The next variation which their visit afforded was produced by the entrance of servants with cold meat, cake, and a variety of Japanese delicacies. There was now employment for the whole party, for though they could not all talk, they could all eat, and the beautiful pyramids of ham, frosting, and zarazushi soon collected them round the table. While thus engaged, Elizabeth had a fair opportunity of deciding whether she most feared or wished for the appearance of Mr. Darcy, by the feelings which prevailed on his entering the room, and then, though but a moment before she had believed her wishes to predominate, she began to regret that he came, for she realized that her breath must tang of sweets and raw eel. He had been some time with Mr. Gardiner, who, with two or three other gentlemen from the house, was musket-fishing in the river, and had left him only on learning that the ladies of the family intended a visit to Georgiana that morning. No sooner did he appear than Elizabeth wisely resolved to be perfectly easy and unembarrassed, because she saw that the suspicions of the whole party were awakened against them, and that there was scarcely an eye which did not watch his behaviour when he first came into the room. In no countenance was attentive curiosity so strongly marked as in Miss Bingley's, in spite of the smiles which overspread her face whenever she spoke to one of its objects. For jealousy had not yet made her desperate, and her attentions to Mr. Darcy were by no means over. Miss Darcy, on her brother's entrance, exerted herself much more to talk, and Elizabeth saw that he was anxious for his sister and herself to get acquainted, and forwarded as much as possible every attempt at conversation on either side. Miss Bingley saw all this likewise, and in the imprudence of anger took the first opportunity of saying, with sneering civility, "Pray, Miss Eliza, are not the militia removed from Meryton? They must be a great loss to your family." In Darcy's presence she dared not mention Wickham's name, but Elizabeth instantly comprehended that he was uppermost in her thoughts, and she had to forcefully repress the desire to blacken Miss Bingley's eyes for such insolence. Exerting her tongue rather than her fists to repel the ill-natured attack, she presently answered the question in a tolerably detached tone. While she spoke, an involuntary glance showed her Darcy with a heightened complexion, his sword hand twitching ever so slightly, and his sister overcome with confusion and unable to lift up her eyes. Had Miss Bingley known what pain she was then giving her beloved friend, she undoubtedly would have refrained from the hint. But she had merely intended to discompose Elizabeth by bringing forward the idea of a man to whom she believed her partial, to make her betray a sensibility which might injure her in Darcy's opinion, and perhaps to remind the latter of all the follies and absurdities by which some part of her family were connected with that corps. Not a syllable had ever reached her of Miss Darcy's meditated elopement. Elizabeth's collected behaviour, however, soon quieted Mr. Darcy's emotion, and as Miss Bingley, vexed and disappointed, dared not approach nearer to Wickham, Georgiana also recovered in time, though not enough to be able to speak any more. Her brother, whose eye she feared to meet, scarcely recollected her interest in the affair, and the very circumstance which had been designed to turn his thoughts from Elizabeth seemed to have fixed them on her more and more cheerfully. Not since the Battle of Tumu Fortress had an assault been so poorly conceived. Their visit did not continue long after the above mentioned, and while Mr. Darcy was attending them to their carriage, Miss Bingley was venting her feelings in criticisms on Elizabeth's person, behaviour, and dress. But Georgiana would not join her. Her brother's recommendation was enough to ensure her favour. His judgment could not err, and he had spoken in such terms of Elizabeth as to leave Georgiana without the power of finding her otherwise than lovely and amiable. When Darcy returned to the shrine, Miss Bingley could not help repeating to him some part of what she had been saying to his sister. "How very ill Miss Eliza Bennet looks this morning, Mr. Darcy," she cried. "I never in my life saw anyone so much altered as she is since the winter. She has grown so brown and coarse. Louisa and I were agreeing that we should not have known her again." However little Mr. Darcy might have liked such an address, he contented himself with coolly replying that he perceived no other alteration than her being rather tanned, no miraculous consequence of travelling in the summer. "For my own part," she rejoined, "I must confess that I never could see any beauty in her. Her midriff is too firm, her arms too free of loose flesh, and her legs too long and flexible. Her nose wants character, it is unbearably petite. Her teeth are tolerable, but not out of the common way, and as for her eyes, which have sometimes been called so fine, I could never see anything extraordinary in them. They have a sharp, knowing look, which I do not like at all. And in her air altogether there is a self-sufficiency and composure which is intolerable." Persuaded as Miss Bingley was that Darcy admired Elizabeth, this was not the best method of recommending herself. But angry people are not always wise, and in seeing him at last look somewhat nettled, she had all the success she expected. He was resolutely silent, however, and from a determination of making him speak, she continued, "I remember, when we first knew her in Hertfordshire, how amazed we all were to find that she was a reputed beauty, and I particularly recollect your saying one night after they had been dining at Netherfield, "She a beauty, I should as soon call her mother a wit." But afterwards she seemed to improve on you, and I believe you thought her rather pretty at one time.
"Yes," replied Darcy, who could contain himself no longer, "but that was only when I first saw her, for I now consider her as one of the handsomest women of my acquaintance." He then went away, and Miss Bingley was left to all the satisfaction of having forced him to say what gave no one any pain but herself. Mrs. Gardiner and Elizabeth talked of all that had occurred during their visit as they returned, except what had particularly interested them both. The look and behaviour of everybody they had seen were discussed, except of the person who had most engaged their attention. They talked of his sister, his friends, his shrine, his Zarazushi, of everything but himself. Yet Elizabeth was longing to know what Mrs. Gardiner thought of him, and Mrs. Gardiner would have been highly gratified by her niece's beginning the subject.
Chapter 46. Elizabeth had been a good deal disappointed in not finding a letter from Jane on their first arrival at Lambton, and this disappointment had been renewed on each of the mornings that had now been spent there. But on the third her repining was over, and her sister justified by the receipt of two letters from her at once, on one of which was marked that it had been aboard a post-carriage that had been overrun by zombies, thus the delay in its delivery. They had just been preparing to walk as the letters came in, and her uncle and aunt, leaving her to enjoy them in quiet, set off by themselves. The one delayed must first be attended to. It had been written 5 days ago. The beginning contained an account of all their little parties and engagements, with such news as the country afforded, but the latter half, which was dated a day later and written in evident agitation, gave more important intelligence. It was to this effect. "Since writing the above, dearest Lizzie, something has occurred of a most unexpected and serious nature. What I have to say relates to poor Lydia. An express came at 12 last night, just as we were all gone to bed, from Colonel Foster, to inform us that she was gone off to Scotland with one of his officers. To own the truth, with Wickham. Imagine our surprise. I am very, very sorry. So imprudent a match on both sides. But I am willing to hope the best, and that his character has been misunderstood. Thoughtless and indiscreet, I can easily believe him, but this step, and let us rejoice over it, marks nothing bad at heart. His choice is disinterested, at least, for he must know my father can give her nothing. Our poor mother is sadly grieved. My father bears it better. How thankful am I that we never let them know of his falling out with Mr. Darcy, or of his treatment of the deaf. We must forget it ourselves." On finishing this letter, Elizabeth instantly seized the other, and opening it with the utmost impatience, read as follows. It had been written a day later than the conclusion of the first. "Dearest Lizzie, I hardly know what I would write, but I have bad news for you, and it cannot be delayed. Imprudent as the marriage between Mr. Wickham and our poor Lydia would be, we are now anxious to be assured it has taken place, for there is now reason to believe that Lydia may have been taken against her will. Colonel Foster came yesterday, having left Brighton the day before, not many hours after the express. Though Lydia's short letter to Mrs. F. gave them to understand that they intended to elope, something was dropped by another officer that Wickham had no such intentions, which was repeated to Colonel F., who, instantly taking the alarm, set off from Brighton, intending to trace their route. He did trace them easily to Clapham, but no further, for on entering that place he was met with a hail of musket balls and forced to seek cover while Wickham and Lydia removed into a hackney coach and sped away. All that is known after this is that they were seen to continue the London road. I know not what to think. After making every possible inquiry on that side of London, Colonel F. came on to Longbourn and broke his apprehensions to us in a manner most creditable to his heart. I am sincerely grieved for him and Mrs. F., but no one can throw any blame on them.
Our distress, my dear Lizzie, is very great. My father and mother believe the worst, that she will be stripped of her clothes, her honour, and her head in quick succession, but I cannot think so ill of him. Many circumstances might make it more eligible for them to be married privately in town than to pursue their first plan, and even if he could carry out such a scheme against a young woman of Lydia's training, which is not likely, can I suppose his character so misjudged by us? Impossible. My father is going to London with Colonel Foster instantly to try to discover her. What he means to do, I am sure I know not, but his excessive distress will not allow him to pursue any measure in the best and safest way, and Colonel Foster is obliged to be at Brighton again tomorrow evening. In such distress, my uncle's advice and assistance would be everything in the world. He will immediately comprehend what I must feel, and I rely upon his goodness. Oh, where is my uncle? Cried Elizabeth, darting from her seat as she finished the letter, without losing a moment of the time so precious. But as she reached the door, it was opened by a servant, and Mr. Darcy appeared. Her pale face and impetuous manner made him start, and before he could recover himself to speak, she hastily exclaimed, "I beg your pardon, but I must leave you. I must find Mr. Gardiner this moment on business that cannot be delayed. I have not an instant to lose." "Good God, what is the matter?" cried he. "I will not detain you a minute, but let me or let the servant go after Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner. You are not well enough. You cannot go yourself." Elizabeth hesitated, but her knees trembled under her, and she felt how little would be gained by her attempting to pursue them. Calling back the servant, therefore, she commissioned him, though in so breathless an accent as made her almost unintelligible, to fetch his master and mistress home instantly. On his quitting the room, she sat down, unable to support herself, and looking so miserably ill that it was impossible for Darcy to leave her or to refrain from saying, in a tone of gentleness and commiseration, "Let me call your maid. Is there nothing you could take to give you present relief? Campo herbs. Shall I get you some? You are very ill." "No, I thank you," she replied, endeavouring to recover herself. "There is nothing the matter with me. I am only distressed by some dreadful news which I have just received from Longbourn." She burst into tears, and for a few minutes could not speak another word. Darcy, in wretched suspense, could only say something indistinctly of his concern, and observe her in a compassionate silence. At length she spoke again. "I have just had a letter from Jane with such dreadful news. It cannot be concealed from anyone. My younger sister is in the power of Mr. Wickham. They are gone off together from Brighton. You know him too well to doubt the rest. She has no money, no connections, nothing that can tempt him to marriage. She is lost forever." Darcy was fixed in astonishment. "When I consider," she added in a yet more agitated voice, "that I might have prevented it, I who knew what he was. Had I but explained some part of it only, some part of what I learnt to my own family, had his character been known, this could not have happened. But it is all too late now."
"I am grieved indeed," cried Darcy. "Grieved, shocked. But it is certain, absolutely certain."
"Oh, yes. They left Brighton together on Sunday night, and were traced almost to London, but not beyond. Colonel Foster has reason to doubt their elopement, and suspects that Lydia was taken against her will."
"And what has been done? What has been attempted to recover her?"
"My father is gone to London, and Jane has written to beg my uncle's immediate assistance, and we shall be off, I hope, in half an hour. But nothing can be done. How are they even to be discovered? I have not the smallest hope."
Darcy shook his head in silent acquiescence.
"When my eyes were opened to his real character, oh, had I known what I ought, what I dared to do. But I knew not. I was afraid of doing too much. Wretched, wretched mistake."
Darcy made no answer. He seemed scarcely to hear her, and was walking up and down the room in earnest meditation, his brow contracted, his air gloomy. Elizabeth soon observed, and instantly understood it. His opinion of her was sinking. Everything must sink under such a proof of family weakness, such an assurance of the deepest disgrace. Never had she so honestly felt that she could have loved him as now, when all love must be vain. Covering her face with her handkerchief, Elizabeth was soon lost to everything else, and was only recalled to a sense of her situation by the voice of her companion. Would to heaven that anything could be either said or done on my part that might offer consolation to such distress. But I will not torment you with vain wishes, which may seem purposely to ask for your thanks. This unfortunate affair will, I fear, prevent my sister's having the pleasure of seeing you at Pemberley today.
Oh, yes. Be so kind as to apologize for us to Miss Darcy. Say that urgent business calls us home immediately. Conceal the unhappy truth as long as it is possible. I know it cannot be long.
He readily assured her of his secrecy, again expressed his sorrow for her distress, wished it a happier conclusion than there was at present reason to hope, and leaving his compliments for her relations, with only one serious parting look, went away. As he quitted the room, Elizabeth felt how improbable it was that they should ever see each other again on such terms of cordiality, and as she threw a retrospective glance over the whole of their acquaintance, so full of contradictions and varieties, sighed at the perverseness of those feelings which would now have promoted its continuance and would formerly have rejoiced in its termination. She saw him go with regret, and in this early example of the shame which Lydia's imminent violation and murder must produce, found additional anguish as she reflected on that wretched business. Never, since reading Jane's second letter, had she entertained a hope of Wickham's meaning to marry her. No one but Jane, she thought, could flatter herself with such an expectation. Surprise was the least of her feelings on this development. While the contents of the first letter remained in her mind, she was all surprise, all astonishment that Wickham should have captured a student of Shaolin, even one so careless as Lydia. But now it was all too natural, for such was her eagerness for the company of handsome officers that her guard would have been sufficiently lowered to allow such a disgrace. Elizabeth was wild to be at home, to hear, to see, to be upon the spot to share with Jane in the cares that must now fall wholly upon her in a family so deranged, a father absent, a mother surely vomiting by now and requiring constant attendance. And though almost persuaded that nothing could be done for Lydia, her uncle's interference seemed of utmost importance. Until he entered the room, her impatience was severe. Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner had hurried back in alarm, supposing by the servant's account that their niece was slain by some unknown enemy, but satisfying them instantly on that head, she eagerly communicated the cause of their summons, reading the two letters aloud. Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner could not but be deeply afflicted. Not Lydia only, but all were concerned in it. And after the first exclamations of surprise and horror, Mr. Gardiner promised every assistance in his power. Elizabeth, though expecting no less, thanked him with tears of gratitude, and all three being actuated by one spirit, everything relating to their journey was speedily settled. They were to be off as soon as possible.
"But what is to be done about Pemberley?" cried Mrs. Gardiner. "John told us Mr. Darcy was here when you sent for us. Was it so?"
"Yes, and I told him we should not be able to keep our engagement. That is all settled."
"What shall we tell our other friends?" said the other, as she ran into her room to prepare. "Oh, how I wish there were time to see Silluck once more."
But wishes were vain, or at least could only serve to amuse her in the hurry and confusion of the following hour. Had Elizabeth been at leisure to be idle, she would have remained certain that all employment was impossible to one so wretched as herself, but she had her share of business as well as her aunt, and amongst the rest there were notes to be written to all their friends at Lambton with false excuses for their sudden departure. An hour, however, saw the whole completed, and Mr. Gardiner, meanwhile having settled his account at the inn, nothing remained to be done but to go, and Elizabeth, after all the misery of the morning, found herself, in a shorter space of time than she could have supposed, seated in the carriage and on the road to Longbourn. Chapter 47 "I have been thinking it over again, Elizabeth,"
said her uncle as they drove from the town. "And really, upon serious consideration, I am much more inclined than I was to judge as your eldest sister does on the matter. It appears to me so very unlikely that any young man should form such a design against a girl who is by no means unprotected or friendless, and who is actually staying in his colonel's family, that I am strongly inclined to hope the best. Could he expect that her friends would not step forward? Could he expect that her sisters would not pursue him to the ends of the earth with their swords? Could he expect to be noticed again by the regiment after such an affront to Colonel Foster? His temptation is not adequate to the risk."
"Do you really think so?" cried Elizabeth. "Upon my word," said Mrs. Gardiner, "I begin to be of your uncle's opinion. It is really too great a violation of decency, honour, and interest for him to be guilty of. I cannot think so very ill of Wickham."
"Can you yourself, Lizzie, so wholly give him up as to believe him capable of it?"
"Not, perhaps, of neglecting his own interest, but of every other neglect I can believe him capable. If, indeed, it should be so. But I dare not hope it. Why should he fire upon the colonel if that had been the case?"
"In the first place," replied Mr. Gardiner, "there is no absolute proof that they do not intend to marry.
But why all this secrecy? Why any fear of detection? Why must their marriage be private?" "Oh, no, no, this is not likely. His fellow officer, you see, by Jane's account, was persuaded of his never intending to marry her. Wickham will never marry a woman without some money. He cannot afford it. And what claims has Lydia, what attraction has she beyond youth and good length of bone, that could make him, for her sake, forego every chance of benefiting himself by marrying well? As to your other objection, I am afraid it will hardly hold good. My sisters and I cannot spend any substantial time searching for Wickham, as we are each commanded by His Majesty to defend Hertfordshire from all enemies until such time as we are dead, rendered lame, or married.
But can you think that Lydia is so helpless as to allow herself, nay, her family, to be so dishonoured?"
"It does seem, and it is most shocking indeed," replied Elizabeth with tears in her eyes, "that a Bennet sister's mastery of the deadly arts should admit of doubt. But really I know not what to say. Perhaps I am not doing her justice. But she is very young, and for the last half year, nay, for a twelvemonth, she has been given up to nothing but amusement and vanity. She has been allowed to dispose of her time in the most idle and frivolous manner, and to neglect her daily sparring, meditation, or even the simplest game of Kiss Me Dear. Since the militia were first quartered in Meryton, nothing but love, flirtation, and officers have been in her head, and we all know that Wickham has every charm of person and address that can captivate a woman." "But you see that Jane," said her aunt, "does not think so very ill of Wickham as to believe him capable of the attempt." "Of whom does Jane ever think ill? I have seen her cradle unmentionables in her arms, apologizing for taking their limbs, even as they tried to bite her with their last. But Jane knows as well as I do what Wickham really is. We both know that he has been profligate in every sense of the word, that he has neither integrity nor honour."
"And do you really know all this?" cried Mrs. Gardiner.
"I do indeed," replied Elizabeth, colouring. "I told you the other day of his infamous behaviour to Mr. Darcy, and you yourself, when last at Longbourn, heard in what manner he spoke of the man who had behaved with such forbearance and liberality towards him. And there are other circumstances which I am not at liberty, which it is not worth while to relate. But his lies about the whole Pemberley family are endless."
"But does Lydia know nothing of this? Can she be ignorant of what you and Jane seem so well to understand?"
"Oh, yes, that is the worst of all. Till I was in Kent and saw so much of both Mr. Darcy and his relation Colonel Fitzwilliam, I was ignorant of the truth myself. So ignorant that my honour required the 7 cuts. And when I returned home, the militia was to leave Meryton in a week or fortnight's time. As that was the case, neither Jane, to whom I related the whole, nor I, thought it necessary to make our knowledge public. For of what use could it apparently be to any one that the good opinion which all the neighbourhood had of him should then be overthrown? And even when it was settled that Lydia should go with Mrs. Foster, the necessity of opening her eyes to his character never occurred to me."
When they all removed to Brighton, therefore, you had no reason, I suppose, to believe them fond of each other?
Not the slightest. I can remember no symptom of affection on either side, other than her carving his name into her midriff with a dagger, but this was customary with Lydia. When first he entered the corps, she was ready enough to admire him, but so we all were. Every girl in or near Meryton was out of her senses about him for the first 2 months, but he never distinguished her by any particular attention, and consequently, after a moderate period of extravagant and wild admiration, her fancy gave way, and others of the regiment, who treated her with more distinction, again became her favourites. However little of novelty could be added to their fears, hopes, and conjectures on this interesting subject by its repeated discussion, no other could detain them from it long during the whole of the journey. From Elizabeth's thoughts it was never absent, fixed there by the keenest of all anguish, self-reproach. She could find no interval.
They travelled as expeditiously as possible, and were unencumbered by England's curse, save for one occasion. The party stopped to change horses in Weston, and Elizabeth took advantage of the occasion with a turn about the inn's modest grounds, hopeful that a bit of walking would relieve her troubled thoughts. When this proved fruitless, she thought to trouble the innkeeper, a Mrs. Lyons, for a basin of warm water that she might wash the shameful remnants of tears from her face. Mrs. Lyons was a stout, motherly woman with a wealth of red hair and a pleasant way about her. She produced the basin straight away, along with a clean cloth, and invited Elizabeth into her bedchamber so that she might enjoy some privacy. Lizzie offered her thanks, sat at the lady's dressing-table, and went about her business. The stillness of the scene was interrupted only by the sound of water dripping into the basin and by the whines of a dog that had been chained up in the adjoining room.
"Pardon my saying so, Miss Burnett, but I dare say you are the most beautiful creature to grace this old inn in 25 years. Were Mr. Lyons, God keep him buried, still with us, he would be blathering on about you for days."
Elizabeth could not help but blush.
"You are too kind, madam, but really I must look a fright after the misfortunes of late."
There was presently a growl from behind the closed door.
"My Toby, he was a handsome boy, he was."
The dog began barking wildly. Though the noise was deafening to Elizabeth's sensitive ears, Mrs. Lyons seemed to take no notice. In fact, Mrs. Lyons seemed suddenly lost in a memory.
"Madam, you will excuse my rudeness, but perhaps your dog is—"
The barking turned to moaning, a terrible sickly moaning that Elizabeth had heard so many thousands of times before, a moaning that had troubled her sleep on countless nights, the moaning of the undead. She stood and seized her ankle dagger at once. Crossing the room, she kicked down the door and stood ready to challenge any number of Satan's soldiers. There was only one. A boy, 8 or 10 years of age, and long since turned, was chained by the neck in the corner of the spare room. His eyes had rotted away, and the floor was deeply scarred where his claws had torn at it for months, for years, perhaps. Lamb bones and bits of wool littered the whole of the room. Upon seeing Elizabeth in the doorway, the creature roared and leapt at her, its jaws snapping, even as the chain tightened around its neck and brought it to the ground. Elizabeth retreated and pressed her blade to Mrs. Lyons' throat. "What trickery is this?" she demanded. "An unmentionable for a pet. What can be the meaning of it?" Mrs. Lyons brought her hands to her face and began to weep. "Speak, woman!"
"My Toby!"
Elizabeth understood at once. She withdrew her blade from Mrs. Lyons' throat and turned back towards the chained creature, its small teeth still snarling and snapping at her. That anyone could care for such a thing was shocking. That anyone could love it seemed impossible.
"He's all the family I have!"
Her own fragile state, coupled with this display of a mother's unconditional love for her child, proved too much for Elizabeth to bear. She could not help her tears.
"The world is mad!"
she said, sobbing.
"The world is mad, and it makes not one bit of difference."
Betraying her honour and her oath, she left the inn without spilling a drop of blood. Elizabeth never spoke of Mrs. Lyons or her son to anyone for the rest of her days.
The party reached Longbourn by dinner time the next day. It was a comfort to Elizabeth to consider that Jane could not have been wearied by long expectations. The little gardeners, attracted by the sight of the chaise, were standing on the steps of the house as they entered the paddock, and when the carriage drove up to the door, the joyful surprise that lighted up their faces was the first pleasing earnest of their welcome. Elizabeth jumped out, and after giving each of them a hasty kiss, hurried into the vestibule, where Jane